in China in the 9th century, there was a scholar monk named Daishan, was a scholar of the Diamond Sutra, and he wrote notes and commentaries about it. Many of you are familiar with the Diamond Sutra. Yesterday, I spoke of abiding nowhere. Heart, mind comes forth. Quote from the Buddha, Tathagata. And as it happened, that very phrase, abiding nowhere, heart, mind comes forth, or just plain mind comes forth. On hearing that, Wei Neng was awakened, hearing someone chanting that. Wei Neng is the sixth ancestor in the Chan tradition, and this Diamond Sutra, the Vajracharaka Prajnaparamita Sutra, is fundamental to Zen practice, fundamental to what's called the Platform Sutra of the Sixth Ancestor, and exists in many different traditions in East Asia and in India. So there's a Sanskrit version, a Mongolian version, a Tibetan version, many Chinese versions, Vietnamese, Korean, Japanese. And in fact, the Diamond Sutra is the oldest printed book that has the date of its printing included in the book. There's an edition of it in the British Museum, dated 800-something, printed. There are actually earlier versions, but they don't include the date of the printing within the book. And this phrase, abiding nowhere, bring forth, or heart mind comes forth, it's just one of a number of phrases there that clarify practice and in a way are about, if I explain it, helping Subhuti, who the Buddha is addressing in, or the Tathagata, doesn't refer to himself as the Buddha, but the thus come one, the Tathagata or Tathagata, depending upon which way you pronounce it and which way you translate it. The Tathagata is attempting to help Subhuti let go of preconceptions and limited notions of this life, this reality that we are. So, Daishan was a scholar of this sutra, and he lived in central northern China. And he heard about this school of Buddhism called Chan, Zen, in the south, which was about transmission mind to mind, people realizing their nature, realizing the Buddha's teaching for themselves, awakening to this, and he was outraged about this. Because he was a scholar, and he felt what was important was studying and writing commentaries. So he undertook to travel to the south of China and to expose the Zen school. Now, some of you might have seen pictures of monks traveling from China to India. You often see they have these backpacks with sutras in them. It's sort of boxes that they wore on their back in which they carried their books and commentaries. So this is the way Daeshan traveled south, many, many miles on foot. So he reached the south, and along the road was an old woman who was selling snacks. The Chinese word for these snacks, these cakes, is called yanxin. Yanxin, which literally means cakes, snacks. However, the characters for these refreshments, I shouldn't say cakes, they were, the word means refreshments, but the etymological characters for these words includes dianxin, lighting up or pointing, xin is mind, mind heart, as in abiding nowhere, heart mind comes forth. So he goes to the old woman and says, I'd like one of those dianxin, one of those refreshments. And the old woman says, oh, monk, what books do you carry in your box? Oh, he said, oh, they are my notes and commentaries on the Diamond Sutra. The old woman said, oh, is that so? She said, in the Diamond Sutra, it says, past mind is ungraspable. The Buddha says, I should say, past mind is ungraspable. Present mind is ungraspable. Future mind is ungraspable. Well, monk, which mind are you going to refresh? He couldn't answer anything. And he had to shut up. The commentaries say, even so, he could not die the great death at the old woman's words, and finally asked her, is there a Chan master in the neighborhood? Now, it's unfortunate that many times, not all the time, but many times in the Chinese Buddhist tradition, these, quote, old women, close quote, are left unnamed. This was certainly, could have been his opportunity to awaken, as it says. He could not die the great death at the old woman's words, but she certainly stabbed him to the heart. So he asked her, is there a Chan master in the neighborhood? And she says, oh, Master Long Tan is 5 miles away, actually 5 li away. So that's not quite miles, but let's just say that. Past mind is ungraspable. Present mind is ungraspable. Future mind is ungraspable. These are wonderful words for us. Wonderful words because of helping us see. Helping us see where past mind, past thoughts we grasp and believe. Present mind, present thoughts we grasp and believe. Future mind, thoughts we grasp and believe. And get in trouble. Get in all sorts of trouble with these because of what we believe about them. All sorts of trouble. Certainly, we abide in these, despite the Tathagatas encouraging us not. In fact, Elsewhere in the Diamond Sutra, Tathagata says, streams of thought, Subhuti, have been preached as streamless. That is why they are called streams of thought. Tathagata says, streams of thought are streamless. That's why they can be called streams of thought. But we believe them. Just as the Buddha says, or as far as Dharma, things, phenomena, all of them are formless. That's why they are called all forms, all dharmas. See? This fundamentally, this Diamond Sutra that Daishan is preaching on, writing commentaries on, but seems to have no sense of what it is presenting to us the opportunity to avoid, to let go of the mental constructs that get us in trouble. The abidance, the holding on to that gets us in trouble. In a way, when we talk about the four practice principles, we're talking about just this, caught in self-centered thought, holding to self-centered thought, caught in self-centered dream, holding to self-centered dream. All of these thoughts and dreams that we hold on to and believe gets us in trouble. This is what the Diamond Sutra and the teachers in all the ways are hoping, attempting to clarify for us. But not in theory, but in the immediacy of which mind are you going to refresh right now? See, this old woman was his teacher right now, but he couldn't get it. At least he saw that he was in trouble and he needed to go looking somewhere. So this is where the sixth ancestor is going to clarify further for us this abiding nowhere, bring forth mind. This ungraspable thought. What is this? So in the Platform Sutra, the sixth ancestor says, friends in the good. That's how he addresses his audience. At least that's the style. Friends in the good. What is our teaching? Our teaching is three things. Wuxiang, Wunian, Wushu, which means without. Wuxiang is without characteristics, which is what the Diamond Sutra says. The Buddha is saying all dharmas are dharmaless, are formless. In a way, it's a way of elaborating on the basic Buddhist teaching of ongoing change, no self, non-self, no fixed permanent self, without characteristics, without thought, without abiding. But what are these? Without characteristics doesn't mean to live in some make-believe place, but it means to be free of the forms, the characteristics, in the midst of the characteristics. In the midst of the characteristics, free of holding, attaching, being caught by the characteristics, or being caught by liking and disliking them. What is without thought? It's exactly our practice. It means without thinking in regard to thoughts. That's what the sixth ancestor says. Without thinking in regard to thoughts. Without becoming attached to thoughts. Or if you say it differently, if you remain free from objects in your thought, you will not give rise to thoughts about thoughts. But do not try to stop thinking and cast aside all thoughts. See, it's important to see how we practice without thought or without being stuck on thoughts. Then we can live. But, he says, as long as one entertains thoughts with regard to objects, to dharmas, to forms, one will bring forth false views, deluded misconceptions regarding the world, regarding objects, have out their root in just this. In just this. In thoughts about thoughts, in thoughts about what we believe dharmas, forms are. So in a sense, he's the sixth ancestors articulating what the Diamond Sutra says. What the Diamond Sutra says to encourage us so that we can live freely without creating trouble. And what does the without, regarding without thoughts mean? The sixth ancestor says, without means being without dualistic characteristics attached to the objects. In other words, not holding on to the dualistic characteristics that we attach to having this or not having this. Some of you might be familiar with the sixth ancestor, with the famous question he asks when he was confronted by someone. He says, thinking neither good nor bad, what is your original face? Sometimes we add on to that, what is your original face before your parents were born? Which is a further elaboration of this thinking neither good nor bad, this dualism that we tend to get caught in. This without abiding isn't something that's extra. It's, if I say it, it's originally what we always are. And yet, we make trouble because we abide here and there and then try to fiddle with where we're abiding. We attach, as you know. See, in a sense, this is the theme you will see, just as what this old woman said to Dashan. not abiding in any past, present, future mind. What mind are you going to refresh right now? What is your mind right now? What is your mind right now? And when we sit, it's exactly the same thing. It's, you could say sitting is not being attaching to mind, or at least when we notice attaching to mind, when we notice attaching to mind, allowing, in noticing, allowing that attachment to go, to let go, so that we can be exactly where and who we are. So that we don't give rise to thoughts about thoughts, whether thoughts about so-called externals or about so-called internals. If you want to talk about sitting in a different way, the sixth ancestor says sitting means not to give rise to thoughts about externals, and Zen, so Zazen, sitting Zen, Zen means not being perturbed internally so that we can be exactly who we are. So we could be this abiding nowhere, which is allowing this heart-mind to come forth. Heart-mind means responding this moment, responding to the old woman asking, which mind will you refresh? Of course, as soon as he starts thinking about it, as soon as none of his answers, none of his commentaries are useful for that, it's hopeless. It's hopeless because instead of being who we always are, originally doesn't mean once upon a time, but originally means right now. Originally means this practice realization right this moment. So what is this practice realization right this moment? What is this being who we are? Or as the Buddha says to Subhuti, all beings, Subhuti, have been preached by the Tathagata as beingless. That's why they are called all beings. That's us. Beingless. That's this abiding nowhere right here. And yet, we want to abide in this form or that form or this or that idea about who we are, and therefore holding on to that, we get into trouble. I should say, this non-abidance is not just in Zen school, but it's considered in the many forms of Mahayana as an aspect of Bodhisattva and Buddhahood, this non-abiding nirvana is sometimes spoken of, but which enables us to freely serve all beings, help all beings, help each moment, while at the same time not holding on and being entangled. And in a way, I'll talk about that maybe the last day, or the last talk, not the last day. Because after all, that's really what our whole practice is about, serving all beings. In the four great vows, it starts, beings are numberless, vowing to serve them all, or save them all, or liberate them all, depending upon how you translate it. Shujo muhen se gando. That's the first. Then comes dealing with delusions, desires, etc. First aspect of our practice. Certainly, if we look at the precepts, look at when we take Jhikai, or even more if you ordain, it's all about serving all beings in all the forms that you encounter. That's what the practice is. Serving means another way of saying liberating. Liberating from what? From attachment to thoughts, forms, and all the other past, present, future that we add on. So the sixth ancestor, in fact, yeah, maybe tomorrow I'll talk about another famous Chan woman who, what should I say, builds on the sixth ancestor's comments. Unfortunately, these women don't get talked about often enough, and we don't see their exemplar. Fortunately, who I'll talk about tomorrow has a name, whereas this old woman does not have a name. There's a number of cases where there's old women who monks, practitioners, travelers encounter on the road, and if I say it in this way, they get a comeuppance from them. Or they get tested in how they can respond to the circumstances. That's always our opportunity. That's always our practice. How do I respond to this circumstance of life, even if it's sitting upright, sitting still? Am I without abiding? Or non-abiding? Or am I caught up in daydreams and thoughts? When I notice caught up in thoughts, daydreams, right there is my opportunity. Don't worry about the past moment or the future moment. Don't exist. Those are just more figments to get us entangled. And it's the entanglement that's always our effort. See? That's always where our effort needs to be. Because this past, present, future are figments that we hold on to if we make something of them. Of course, they're fine. Yesterday I talked about such and such. Tomorrow I'm going to talk about such and such. And yet, past mind is ungraspable, intangible. Present mind, present thoughts are intangible, ungraspable. Future thoughts are intangible, ungraspable. You don't have to believe the Tathagata. Look at yourself. Can you grasp past mind thoughts. Can you grasp? And yet we assume we can, because we think about them. We fiddle with them. What she said to me, what he did to me, what I didn't get, what I should do, what if? Even the thoughts as we're sitting upright are ungraspable, intangible, whatever word you want to use to translate the Sanskrit or Chinese or whatever language you're translating from. That's the fundamental, this non-abiding is fundamental, this ingraspable, ungraspable, I don't think ingraspable is a word, excuse me, this ungraspable, this intangible is so right now. And yet, it's always right here. See? Always right here. Oh, I talk too much. Well, let me leave you with the famous phrase from the end of the Diamond Sutra, where the Tathagata says, all conditioned phenomena, all dharmas, all things, if you want to say it that way, physical, mental, are like a dream, an illusion, a bubble, a shadow, dew or a flash of lightning. Thus should you perceive, consider them. So, I'll stop here and see if we could make anything of my ramblings here. Thank you. If you need to move, please do. Yes.
So what happens when the scholar meets the master?
Oh. They have a long interchange. And, well, first the scholar challenges the master. But I'll leave that for another time. But they have a long interchange. And it goes into late in the night. And so he then takes his leave of the master. He's going to go out. He opens up the door to the hut and he looks out. And he says, it's dark outside. So the master takes a lamp and lights it and gives it to him. And as he takes the lamp and is ready to go out, the master blows it out. And at that he awakens. But you could read that case. It's, let's see what number it is. It's in a collection called The Gateless Gate. I think it's number 28. And the scholar becomes a great Zen master. His name is Daishan or Toksan. And there's another case of him when he's an old man, but you see this same characteristics where notice that when the old woman bested him, he didn't, become super defensive. Instead, he hung his head and said, well, is there a great Zen master here who could teach me? And she said, go. So he, there's another case in this collection where he comes to the dining room early. So one of his senior students is trying to sort of do something. So he goes over and he says, what are you doing here early? The bell hasn't rung yet. So he just turns around and he goes back. Just responds to the circumstances without challenging and, you know, defending himself. This is in the, it's known, the case is known as well-known Lungtan. Lungtan, Ryutan is the name of the master who he's going to meet. Lungtan means long, I can't, don't, my Chinese is terrible, I'm sorry. Japanese is easier. Ryu means dragon, and Tan means lake. So when he goes to see the master, he says, oh, I've heard about this dragon lake, but here I don't see any dragon and I don't see any lake. But the master said, then you've really seen Ryutan or Lungtan. Lungtan. I give up. I'm ashamed to say it, try to say anything in Chinese because my mouth doesn't form the sounds correctly. Anyway, but you could look that up. It's in the Gateless Gate. It's online and elsewhere. And you could look even commentaries on it of all sorts. So there's hope for all of us. If there's hope for this scholar who was sure he was right and he was going to convince them that they were all evil and wrong. See, he was willing to see, oh, I can't respond to this woman. Even though I know this, see, I know it in and out. I've written commentaries on it, but I can't respond right here. It would have been better if he had either seen something or he had said to her, well, teach me. But given the patriarchal nature of China, that's hard. You'll see. Tomorrow, I'll give you another example where at least for a little bit that patriarchal tradition is turned on its head. So that's for tomorrow. I can't do that today.
Yeah. If you were to name her,
No. I'm not going to give someone a name who I don't know. It's best that she remains anonymous because then she stands for all the anonymous women who practiced and realized and were great masters. There are some named in the Chinese and Japanese tradition. There are some women named, but there's many more who are nameless. And that, you know, what can I say? Or whose names have been forgotten, even though they might be named at certain places. One of Bodhidharma's successes is a woman. And she's named. I don't remember what her name is now. But there are others. So there's actually, there's a collection that's of women teachers, most, not just Zen. I think it's called the Empty Valley Collection, but I'm not so sure. I have to look. I have it. I have the name, and I have some of it on my electronic device, and I could look at the name and tell you it if you want to look for it. So it's a collection done in America in recently to try to counteract. So it's got all American, no, I shouldn't say mostly American, but mostly American women commenting on women cases in Zen, Tibetan, and other traditions. I think it's called Empty Valley Collection, but I'm not sure right now. You like that guy's response?
Yes, Daishan or no?
Daishan.
Yeah.
Daishan.
Yeah.
Or Toksan. Yeah. Toksan's easier. That's the Japanese word.
I cannot recall.
Which response do you like?
The response that you know, where's the guy that knows about this stuff?
But why did he not respond? Well,
relate to his. It's human to me. That's very human.
To be frustrated, and
right.
But he could have also asked her, "Can you teach me?"
Well, I guess so. Yeah, I guess he could.
See, and he didn't.
Yeah.
See, but that's part of the Chinese tradition.
I can relate to him because it doesn't sound like he's from some other planet.
Well, all of these people are no different than us. The sixth ancestor is no different than us. All of these, whether it's the Buddha or anyone else, are humans like us, and they're addressing issues that we all have. Issues of holding on to thoughts, believing forms, believing permanence, believing self of others, believing self of things, of conditions. All of that is our habits. It's the habits of being human. They're not bad, except that they have negative consequences of suffering and harm. They seem natural to us, and it doesn't matter what culture. India, China, Japan, Korea, Vietnam, anywhere, Mongolia. I'm just picking Asian cultures. You could pick any other culture in any place else. This is what humans do. And this is what the Buddha's teaching and our practice in various forms are attempting to address. The suffering that comes from believing thoughts as true, believing emotion thoughts as true, and as a basis of which to act, either towards ourselves, get upset, get hurt, or towards others, harm them, be fearful and angry, retaliate, all these other things, judge them. See, these are all, that's exactly what's being addressed. Nothing else. The simple human tendencies, which each culture, you know, emphasizes and nourishes in its own way. But this is what being human is about, unfortunately and unfortunately. Because it's normal and natural for the human animal that we are to act in these ways. And yet, at a certain point, the Buddha's teaching is about saying, hey, these ways of acting create suffering and harm in your life, in the life of those you love, and in the life of the whole universe, in everyone you encounter. Because they're based on a fiction that seems to be true, but is often misplaced. Misplaced because we live in a world of shoulds and shouldn'ts, wants and don't wants, good and bad, and we believe those as fixed realities, rather than as fleeting thoughts that come and go, as illusions and dreams and shadows coming and going. That's why there's that ending in the Diamond Sutra, to see that what we're holding on to are illusions, and if we beat ourselves or others up about them, we all get lots of bruises and aches and pains. That's what this is about. And that's what the practice is about. That's what this formless, no form, no non-thought, and so forth. See? That's what see. The sixth ancestor says, non-thought means that while you see all forms, all dharmas, meaning physical forms, mental forms, you don't become attached. You don't attach in a, he says, tainted way to any of these things. And while it extends in all directions, you're not attached to specific objects and places. And you abide in your original nature of non-abiding. I shouldn't say abiding. You always keep. You are the root of this non-abiding. You are the non-abiding, which is the root of who and what you are. That's what he says. Therefore, you can penetrate all forms, all situations, and see that the realms that you encounter are all the realms of Buddhas and be Buddhas. Yeah, that's who we are. Yes, there was a hand. Yeah.
It reminds me that it's a new agey thing to say, you know, you create your own reality. And, you know, it seems like that's what this is talking about. And I of course, do that, you know, so much. Create whole worlds whole worlds with thoughts that may or may not exist, but many times don't exist. And it also reminds me when you said something about misperception. Thich Nhat Hanh has a thing where he just suggests, you know, asking ourselves, are you sure?
Yes.
Asking myself, am I sure?
Yes. Is it true?
Before proceeding or even definitely before doing anything, but even just with thoughts, you know, just... Am I sure?
Yeah. Someone mentioned to me that Joko would sometimes ask, is it really so? Or is it something that you think should be or that you think is? Is it true? Is it really true? And we often... In a sense, this is what these various quotes from the Diamond Sutra are all about. In a sense, you could say the whole Diamond Sutra is about letting go of preconceived notions about this reality, whether it's about so-called our own functioning or about what we so-called encounter outside. Of course, outside and inside are just... stories we have, but that's what, in a sense, the Diamond Sutra is about, and that's what the Buddha's teaching about. If you think of the Four Noble Truths or the various other formulations, what's the true name? What's the true form? What's this non-abiding, which is the wisdom of, if you want to use words, stinky words, you could say emptiness. If it's empty of fixedness, of the fixed story that we put on it, then there isn't a basis to become angry or dispute or fight or fear. But we believe the fixed story we give on all sorts of things, whether those things are our thoughts or others' thoughts or our thoughts about what others are thinking or all sorts of other aspects. See, in a sense, this is an encouragement for us to dwell in the reality of the moment or dwell in the prajna of the moment, if I use such a word. Because then we can respond genuinely. We can respond as appropriate. Thank you.